Hi, and welcome to another episode of the Cover Zero Podcast, the show where I cover the least in the best way possible. I'm your host, Jason Wells. Today is Wednesday, April 9th. I am upset that there is snow on the ground currently, but what else can you do? This episode, again, getting closer and closer to draft, but because I didn't actually look at a calendar to see when the draft was, I thought this was going to be my overall thoughts of the draft class, and then going into mock draft next week, and then boom, we're at the draft. And I'm missing a week in there. So no overall massive thoughts of the entire draft class this week. I know I teased it at the end of last episode. This is going to be the guys who throughout this draft process have just been overthought, picked apart, because they have been the top end guys of this draft for basically the entire year. Nothing has changed other than more people watching film to try to nitpick their games. So I'm going to talk about those guys and why they shouldn't be nitpicked. I'm also going to talk about some of the guys who have some round one hype, who might slide due to injury concerns or maybe character concerns, but we'll get into that when we get into that. So that's going to be the overall episode. As always, we'll start off with NFL weekly update shortly here. A couple of retirings, a couple of extensions, a couple of big retirings, honestly. Going to be a good episode. Going to be obviously a little bit of a shorter episode than I expected, but nonetheless, it's going to be a good one. So let's get into it right now. So starting off with NFL weekly update, the first of two big retirements, Julio Jones officially calls it quits from the NFL after a 13-year career, two-time first-team All-Pro, three-time second-team All-Pro, seven-time Pro Bowler, and the fastest player to 10,000 yards, 11,000 yards, 12,000 yards, and 13,000 yards. I don't think it's an exaggeration for me to say that Julio Jones was the best receiver of his generation, and I guess my generation, because that was like my high school, I guess would have been before high school a little bit when he got drafted, but like when I really started watching football, Julio was that dude, and he was that dude basically the entire time. And I think that there was a lot, again, there's a lot of good, great, elite Hall of Fame wide receiver guys from that 2010s decade. I think Julio Jones is the best receiver of that decade, of that generation. So damn good. Like, when you want to build a perfect wide receiver, it's Julio Jones. He has the height. He has the weight. He's got the speed. He's got the vertical. He's got the route running, the high point catches, just the great hands in general. There is nothing. Like, Julio Jones is the perfect receiver. He played like the perfect receiver all those years in Atlanta. Obviously, when he left Atlanta, the Titans, Bucks, Eagle years weren't great, obviously, weren't even good. But that time when he was with Atlanta, that is by far one of the best receivers on the planet, if and ever. Definitely a Hall of Famer. I think it was Bleacher Report tweeted out, and that might have been a bad take of the week was, oh, is Julio Jones a Hall of Fame lock? Yes, Julio Jones is a Hall of Fame lock. That's a stupid thing to say. No, Julio is awesome. Like, I spent some time just on the weekend, like going over, like, old Julio highlights, and you just forget how good, like, he really was. I mean, that catch in the Super Bowl, that would have been one of the best catches ever if the Falcons don't blow that lead. I mean, when he mossed three Panthers DBs en route to, like, a 300-yard game. Like, the highlights were endless from Julio. Such a good player for such a long time. He will be missed. He will be missed. I will be interested to see, because, again, I said fastest player to 10,000, 11,000, 12,000, 13,000. I'd be interested to see what Justin Jefferson, if he can match those marks. I think he's got a decent chance, and honestly, probably so does Ja'Marr Chase. So we're living in a good era of wide receivers anyways, but congrats to Julio Jones retiring. Next note up, next retiring here, Teron Armstead officially retires from the NFL, 12-year career, 9 with the Saints, 3 with the Dolphins, second team All-Pro once, 5-time Pro Bowler. Armstead was just awesome. And it started during his draft process and at the combine. And I think Teron Armstead might have been one of the first players where, when I was watching the combine back, what grade would I have been in? That would have been grade 10, me watching the combine. And all of a sudden, here comes Teron Armstead up to run his 40. And he runs a 4.71 40. And I was like, I know nothing about this guy. I want him on the Dolphins. And took him a little while to get there, but he did get there, and he was so good. Obviously, the injury stuff, like, he missed some starts, but when he played, he was consistently great. Like, again, one of the better tackles of the last decade, and I don't know if it'll amount to Hall of Fame like it did for Julio, but you can guarantee that Teron Armstead will be in the Cover Zero Hall of Very Good. So much fun, such a good player. Again, third round pick, coming from a small, like, HBCU school, and then running that 4.71 at, I forget how big he is, like 6'6", 3'11". 4.71, that's faster than Xavier Restrepo, who's like Miami Hurricanes college wide receiver who's going to get drafted this year. He ran a 4.8 at like 5'10", 180. Teron Armstead is a freak. One of the best, most consistent tackles of the last 10 years. I will be missing him a ton. And obviously, got to relate it back to the Dolphins. There goes our left tackle. There goes our star left tackle. And I don't care what Dolphins fans be like, oh, well, he missed games. He wasn't always there for it. It's like, I don't give a shit. Teron Armstead, when he plays, is a goddamn, like, top 10, top 5 left tackle in the league. I don't care if he's banged up, whatever. And we're going to miss that. We're going to feel his absence on the field come September, and I'm just banking on second round pick from last year, Patrick Paul, to emerge as that guy, and I have high hopes. Again, we knew he was going to be a little bit of a developmental project, but 6'6", 330, he's got, like, that the Predator face mask, scary-looking face mask, but, like, he is a massive human being. I'm sure working under Armstead has helped him, and I believe he can be our left tackle of the future, but it's definitely more of a sore spot now, and we got one more old guy who didn't retire, but it is going to be his last year, and we'll get into that soon enough, too. A couple of extensions here. Trey McBride signs a 4-year, $76 million deal with the Cardinals. Highest paid tight end in the league now at AAVs around $19 million. Yeah, Trey McBride absolutely deserves this. You see how integral he is to that Cardinals offense. Like, he is their focal, like, number one receiving option. I would like to think that might switch to Marv next year, or at least more 50-50 on what they're doing, but Trey McBride has definitely established himself as one of the better tight ends in the league right now. Top two? He's definitely top three. I definitely give him top three. He might be top two. And off the top of my head, not really thinking of, like, who else would be in that conversation, but, like, Trey McBride, obviously. Brock Bowers would also be in that conversation now. Guys like George Kittle, I don't think that Travis Kelce is part of that, like, high-end tight end conversation anymore, like, one of the elite guys, but he's obviously still good. I think I'm forgetting, like, a really, really big name, and that's gonna bug me, but either way, Trey McBride, fucking awesome, really deserves this extension, and yeah, resets the tight end market. I'm sure that makes other tight ends who are going to get paid shortly, I'm sure that makes them happy. We can move on, though. Next, another extension here, Geno Smith signs a 2-year, $75 million deal with the Raiders, 66.5 of that guaranteed. It's a good deal for Geno. And obviously, he still has 1 year left on his original deal, so he's there. He will be in Las Vegas for, did I say Oakland at first? I don't think I did. I think I just said Raiders. Either way, he will be with the Raiders for the next 3 seasons. Good to have, and especially at that number, where now you look at that Sam Darnold deal that the Seahawks gave them, where I was like, oh, that's like not like I thought Sam Darnold could have got more. Geno and Sam Darnold are basically getting the same amount of money for this year, and I think I know who I'd rather have. Maybe, I don't know. It's, again, it's comparable now, and all the Raiders are doing is they want to build that floor, build a culture of, I don't know, again, winning football, something that they haven't been privy to for this entire century almost. Obviously, there was like, oh, the Derek Carr years. Those were a little fun. AC/DC, him and Amari Cooper, Khalil Mack. But those were short-lived years. And now that I'm saying this out loud, this kind of feels like how the Miami 22, 23, 24 seasons went for me. And I'm not a fan of saying that. But either way, Raiders get their guy. They will obviously probably draft someone to sit under Geno Smith for a year, whether that be this year or next year or the year after that. But Geno will be a Raider, will finish his career as a Raider anyways. And again, congrats on getting that bag. People thought he was a bust, jumped around, hung on with Seattle, and he's proven to be a pretty damn good starter in this league. And yeah, the other note I was alluding to, Calais Campbell goes back to the Cardinals where it all started. 1 year, $5.5 million deal, up to $7 million. It hurts me as a Dolphins fan, but like, Calais Campbell getting to wrap up his career where it all started for him. It's nice. It's awesome to see. Am I jealous of the Cardinals? Obviously, because even though Calais Campbell is, I think he's 38 turning 39, he's such a good player. Like, I know he's old, and I know this is like, again, he's almost 40, but he's still playing some damn good football. And obviously, Calais Campbell won't be playing like 80% of the snaps for the Cardinals, but the fact that you can bring him in and teach these younger guys, like a guy like Darius Robinson, who they drafted last year, who obviously not the same size profile as someone like Calais, but in the same way where early Calais, yeah, they brought him off on the edge. He rushed on the interior, and I think that's something that they want to do with Darius Robinson and bringing in just grizzled vet who's still such a good player. It's huge for the Cardinals. Like, this is, I'm very interested to see what they do at pick 16, I think. Because, like, if they can add, like, a surefire edge, if they get, like, a Mike Green or a Shamar Stewart or a Donovan Azaraku, Jalen Walker, whatever, that defense all of a sudden, and, like, that front four all of a sudden looks really good. Obviously, yeah, lots of time for things to happen, what, but, yeah, the Cardinals, I can talk myself into them a little bit on, especially for their defense, and I think Jonathan Gannon's going to do some fun things. But yeah, Calais Campbell goes back to Arizona. Yeah. Now, again, back to the Dolphins side of things. I'm upset because the Dolphins apparently didn't make him that offer and wasn't even second in terms of offers. I think the Ravens, which I'm donning a Ravens shirt right now, I think the Ravens were second for him, which makes it even worse because where the Dolphins sit, and especially on the defensive tackle front, is we got two guys. We got Zach Seiler, and I don't even know who our other guy is because he's that unimportant. So we have a massive, massive hole. And paying someone like Calais Campbell 1 year, $5.5 million to just, like, go back. Like, I don't know why that wasn't an easy, like, yep, sign the check, boom, there you go, welcome back, Calais. I have no idea. And I know this is a very, very deep defensive tackle class. I thought I was going to be talking about that today, but I'll be talking about it next week now. It's a very deep defensive tackle class, so we should be able to come away with a couple guys, but I assumed that we'd have at least, like, oh, Calais Campbell would be there, and then there would be a younger guy to mix in with the rotation, but there isn't. And now my thoughts about the Dolphins are much lower than they were at this point last week anyways. So very, very happy for Calais. I can't wait for his retirement. That man's a future Hall of Famer. I had like my doubts about will he, won't he? But he's been this good for that long. I don't know how he isn't a Hall of Famer. And he's just like, he's one of the best people too, according to everyone. So shout out to, what happened to all of my notes? Okay, there they are. Perfect. We'll keep going, though. Trey Lance signs a one-year deal with the Chargers. I think it's up to $6 million. I don't know what the number is. People were freaking out. It's like, $6 million? No, he's not getting paid $6 million. The Dolphins are paying Zach Wilson $6 million, but no, it's up to $6 million. And everyone, I don't know why I'm still caping for Trey Lance. Like, I had such high hopes for him in that 2021 draft, and it never amounted to anything, because obviously that first year it was understandable that he was going to sit behind Jimmy G. And then the second year he starts, he looks pretty good. He looks okay, like played in a monsoon, and then gets hurt. And then he's just never had his chance. And it's like, you look at his starts, they're not bad. His numbers are pretty good for a guy who just hasn't played football. He has as many reps as Tom Brady did in his final season than he does in his entire high school, collegiate, pro career. This is a man who we all knew was a project and just needed reps, and he's just not getting any. So he goes to the Chargers, who I'm assuming he'll beat out Easton Stick for that backup job. I don't know. I got into this argument with Cameron, and I do, because Cameron, again, the Niners fan who... He hates Trey Lance for multiple reasons, and more, it's just he wasted so much draft capital that they had when they were kind of in their prime Super Bowl window, which is unfortunate, but I don't get the Trey Lance slander, especially when you see people who do have jobs in the NFL, like Tim Boyle, Dorian Thompson-Robinson. Like, there are really bad backups who are still just hanging around, and I don't think Trey Lance deserves, like, that bad of a label. But I will move on from Trey Lance, because it really is an insignificant signing, unless you're me, who still holding on to my Trey Lance stock. Don't know why, but I am. We have a QB trade. Joe Milton and a 7th-round pick get traded to the Cowboys for a 5th-round pick. The Cowboys love doing this thing where they just get people with high pedigree who they liked in the draft process, and they overpay for them. And I think Joe Milton's just the next line of that. Jonathan Mingo, who else did they bring in that just kind of, Kenneth Murray, just like those types of signings where I'm just like, why are these guys getting brought into the building? Now, Joe Milton had a very good start last year, week 18 against the Bills. Were the Bills trying to lose that game so the Patriots wouldn't get first overall pick? Who knows? Did the Bills play all of their backups? Yes, they did. So Joe Milton played a very good game against backup players. Sure. I don't think that one game should have changed a ton of people's opinions on him, because we all know Joe Milton can throw the fuck out of a ball. Like, he can throw it 80 yards. Like, it's crazy. Can he hit the broad side of the barn? Not really. Could he do it against the Bills' backups in Week 18? It looked like he could. So, again, developmental quarterback, I wouldn't have given up a 5th-round pick for Joe Milton, but Jerry Jones is stupid. Again, I'm honestly, this might be just a new routinely thing that I do, is I have to just call out Jerry Jones for being stupid every week. Yeah, I think, again, fine trade for the Patriots. You drafted a guy who you didn't thought would really be anything for your franchise, and you upgraded his draft stock. So, good for you, Cowboys. I guess this is your new backup QB. I would have kept Trey Lance or Cooper Rush instead of going for Joe Milton, because if that gets hurt, I don't know how good Joe Milton's going to be, but either way, we can move on. The Raiders release corner Jack Jones from their team. If you don't remember Jack Jones, he was the guy who brought guns to the airport and didn't realize. So that's Jack Jones. Had a good start to his career with the Patriots, and obviously he's a little bit of a head case. Again, how don't you know you're bringing guns to an airport? I have no idea. But he's out with the Raiders now. His connection to the Raiders, Antonio Pierce was on that college staff at ASU when Jack Jones was there. So Pierce brought him over hoping to like get him, and I think the Raiders were just kind of like, hey, well, Pierce is done, so are you. Raiders just have a massive, massive hole at corner. Jack Jones will get picked up by someone probably after the draft. And he's, again, he's a solid starting corner. he's shown the potential to be better than what he is, but if he can just get his head on straight, maybe a little bit, but yeah. Next note here, Jordan Pataia, I don't know if I'm saying that right, he signs a deal with the Chargers. You have no idea who that is. He is a New Zealand, no, he's not, South African rugby player, 6'3", 230, and he's getting signed as a tight end. Again, one of these rugby players that's go. We had Louis Rhys-Zammit last year. Oh, who is there? Is Christian something? Not Christian Haynes. But either way, the NFL has been doing this rugby thing. Obviously, Jordan Mailata is the most proven guy, but not many guys are Jordan Mailata size who can put on that bulk to play offensive line. But we'll see what Jordan Pataia can do with the Chargers. Again, 6'3", 220. Size isn't the greatest, obviously. I'll just say with, like, the rugby players, like, at the end of the day, he's 25 also, but, like, at the end of the day, maybe these guys are just going to be, like, really good special teamers, because, again, rugby, you need to be able to run with the ball, also be able to tackle well, you got to, like, keep your lanes, that's really important on special teams, too, so maybe he's just a special teamer, we'll see how that works out for him, but just a fun signing for the Chargers. Another fun signing here is Colin Granger signs a one-year deal with the Carolina Panthers. Granger in college averaged 7 points and 4 rebounds on 58% shooting, and if you are confused, Colin Granger is a Coastal Carolina basketball product. D1 player, he is 6'9". He was listed at 6'9", 225 during the basketball season. He's apparently bulked up to 240. So yeah, the Panthers sign a basketball player. And I say he's a basketball player. He's never played organized football. And I just love that a guy who's never played football, who's just big and athletic, can just sign a deal with the Panthers. Again, we'll see how it goes. It's fun. Big white man with a mustache. If you're curious, I don't know. I thought that was, for some reason, important to mention. But, yeah, interested to see how that goes. Hey, maybe he's the next Antonio Gates. I really doubt it, but he's 6'9". That's really tall. And I don't know if this was confirmed, but someone posted like an RAS thing for him, and it wasn't complete. But the vertical was filled in at 40 inches, where if you're 6'9 and have a 40-inch vertical, hey, maybe you have a role. Hey, maybe on field goal blocks, you just stand behind the nose tackle, defensive tackles, and you just get up high. I don't know. But another fun story, another fun signing. And last note here, NFL uniform policy change. Teams can now wear their alternates or their throwbacks up to 4 times now. That's awesome. Most teams' throwbacks or alternates are better than their current jerseys. That's Miami Dolphins included. So I love it. I love seeing, again, just more creativity, more customization. I don't know why the NFL is such a stickler for, like, no, you have to wear your home in a way. Like, there's no, like, real customization to, like, anything. This doesn't really allow for customization, but at least it gives teams a chance, again, 4 times a year to wear a different uniform than what their standard one is. And I like that a lot. And we can end NFL Weekly Update here. And we can go on to the guys that have just been getting overthought of now, slash might fall due to various reasons. We'll start off with the guys who might slide in the draft. Again, I'll specify whether it's character or injury or other off-field concerns, but this came out recently where someone, Jahad Campbell, linebacker out of Bama, I think he's a top 20 player for me. I thought he was just, again, surefire first-round pick. I would have been okay with Miami taking him at 13, but apparently he might slide now because of a injury. I think it's a shoulder injury that's kind of lingering around, which sucks for Campbell. Kind of nice for those teams picking early day two, where a guy like Jahad Campbell might be there, who I think Jahad Campbell's the best off-ball linebacker in this draft by quite a bit. His instincts, his size, his willingness to tackle, like, very, very fun player, but he is someone where if you're doing mocks, maybe mock him a little lower than you expect, because there's injury concern is real, apparently. I should have said this off the top here, too, where all of this stuff is from what I've read off Twitter. because I have no real NFL sources other than my friend Art's dad, who used to be a scout, but it's not like I'm texting him to be like, hi, Dan, I know you've been out of the NFL for 2 decades now, but what's happened with this? Maybe I should do that. That would be funny. So yeah, like all of this stuff is just basically like Twitter rumors that like, anonymous NFL scout tells blank that this is, yeah, whatever's happening. And I'll go into the next guy, Luther Burden, wide receiver out of Missouri. If this was the 2024 draft, probably would have been, I mean, I say that, but probably not, because that fucking first round was, I mean, the wide receiver group last year was so stacked. But had a terrific 2023 season this year, kind of just because the offense at Missouri wasn't as good. Pretty good numbers, but obviously not what the 2023 tape and stats showed. But Burden might slide just a little bit because apparently his mom's a little nuts and so is his girlfriend, and teams don't like to deal with that. And it's not even just like, oh, they're just a little nuts. I think his mom might be his agent, which that's always a little stressful when family gets involved at that level, but that's kind of Luther Burden's thing. Maxwell Harrison out of Kentucky, the the fastest player at the combine this year. Yeah, corner out of Kentucky. He might slide a little bit because there's some off-field concerns that might have sexually assaulted someone. Not great. Again, it's allegations, they're rumors, but they're out there anyways, and that's why Harrison might slide a little bit. And same reason why Mike Green out of Marshall. Again, there's a reason he was at Marshall and not Virginia Tech where he started. Again, it's the bad sexual assault allegations that caused him to leave the school, and now he's here now. And it doesn't seem like those rumors are hurting his draft stock, but it's something in the back of teams' minds that they will definitely have to consider with a player like Mike Green. So again, just another one. James Pierce Jr. out of Tennessee. So there's some character concerns that people are worried about. And it's the same for Walter Nolan, who I'll talk about in a bit here too. But all I'm getting, so it's like, at least for the other ones, I've seen things where it's like, people might not like this guy's like mom and girlfriend, and oh, there's an injury, and oh, there's literally some serious allegations for some. Like with James Pierce and Walter Nolan, it's just character concerns. And when you try to dive in any deeper, like I tried to go for a deep dive on Twitter to see like who's in, there are a lot of people being like, what are these character concerns? What are people talking about? And other than just like, oh, random NFL scout says that, oh, there's some character concerns with James Pierce and Walter Nolan. I don't really know. Walter Nolan's been to 5 different schools, 3 different high schools, 2 different colleges, like just kind of like a mercenary for hire, and people are questioning like, oh, his love for the game. James Pierce Jr. might be a locker room concern where like guys don't really like him, kind of a dickhead. I have no idea. But those are guys who are getting first round buzz anyways that might become day 2 picks because of whatever off-field stuff that's happening. And now we'll talk about the guys who are just getting overthought of completely in this draft class because they have just been the top guys for so long. Those guys, okay, Tet McMillan, Will Campbell, Kelvin Banks, Malachi Starks, Mason Graham, and Will Johnson. All of them are just getting picked apart for whatever reason, and I don't really get it. We'll start off with Will Johnson. Turn on the 2023 tape. I can say that with a lot of the prospects in this draft, where due to injury or whatever, and Will Johnson was banged up this year. That is noted that he was playing with an injury late in the season. And obviously that Michigan team just kind of stunk in general, going off that national championship. But the Will Johnson 2023 tape would have, like, let's say 2024 happened and the 2023 tape was the 24 tape. Will Johnson would have rivaled Travis Hunter for corner one in this class. Like, that is a serious, serious, like, thing. And the fact that there's been, again, because he's been so overthought, because we all know that Will Johnson going into this year was going to be a first-round top 10 potential pick at corner. And that hasn't changed, other than people being like, oh, well, I don't know, an injury concern. I don't know, his compete level isn't always there. And I get it. my compete level also wouldn't be there if I had an incredible year at Michigan and I had to come back because of just draft rules. Still a really good player, still a dynamic player, still the second best corner in this class, should not be overthought of. And same thing with his teammate, Mason Graham. And I think that Mason Graham kind of shot himself in the foot just a little bit during his process because his play weight, it's rumored to be 310, 315. That's what he plays at. And when he checked in at the combine, I think he came in around like 295 and people were like, oh, he's way lighter than I expected. And where he kind of shot himself in the foot was there was an injury and he didn't end up actually doing any of the testing at the combine. So he measured in way lighter than he normally would have. And he didn't do the athletic testing that would have proven that, oh, yeah, he's a freak. Who fucking cares? So, and he's just, again, we're now in this process. We're same thing with Mason Graham, like Will Johnson. Going into this season, it was, yep, Mason Graham is one of the best defensive prospects in this draft. And he still is. And people like to pick him apart where it's like, oh, well, he's a little undersized. He doesn't play, oh, he doesn't, like, doesn't have enough power in run defense. And it's just like, he's so good. Again. Like Will Johnson, it sucks coming, having like an incredible career year, national championship, and then still having to come back and try to put out better tape. And Mason Graham's tape was still awesome this year. He's a really good run defender. He can give you a lot of juice in the pass rush game too, something he can develop a little bit better at, but he's still a damn good player. And I've seen him get nitpicked way too much over the last month or so anyways. Like, if he would have come in at the combine 310, did his testing, and his testing showed that, yeah, he's a freak athlete, no one would be, like, having, like, humming and hawing about how good Mason Graham is. Mason Graham is awesome. Don't overthink it. The other guy that needs to get overthought, same thing. His 2023 tape, better than his 2024 tape, but Malachi Starks is a top 10 player for me, the best safety far and away in this class. And it's just getting overthought. I mean, Vegas still has Nick Amanawari as the in their draft odds as the first safety to go, and I don't really understand that. I like Nick Amanawari, but for a guy who's that big and that freakishly athletic, he doesn't play like it. Where I see a guy like Malachi Starks, where, yeah, that 2023 tape was awesome when he was making plays, causing turnovers. That Georgia defense was obviously just better in 23 than it was in 24. But even in 24, this is just someone who is so consistently sound across every area of the position while still being a damn good athlete. Like, that's something that's like, oh, his 40 was like, oh, he's not as fast as I thought he would be. But then when they were running the position drills and like the next gen stats tracker of like how fast they're actually going, he hit 23 miles per hour on the tracker. That's fast. And like noticing like at the combine too is his speed doesn't change. There's no kind of like, oh, he's breaking down to change direction. He maintains his speed so well, which is so hard to do. Just getting overthought of. Like, I don't know how he isn't consensus number one safety. I don't know how Vegas thinks that Nick Amanawari is going to be the first safety taken. I have taken advantage of that anyways. Hopefully we'll see, but Malachi Starks, again, we knew going into this year was going to be one of the better defensive prospects, and he held up his end of the bargain. But now we're getting into the, like, again, we're getting into the territory of, okay, everyone likes Malachi Starks. Am I going to have a different take of, oh, this is why Malachi Starks won't work out? And it's dumb. It's stupid. It makes no sense to me. Next guy up here, we have Kelvin Banks out of Texas. And I think I mentioned it a few weeks ago where Kelvin Banks just hasn't been talked about in this process. And when we start the season in September 2024, Kelvin Banks was talked about, oh, he might be the best tackle prospect in this class, or one of the best tackle prospects in this class. And the 2024 season finished, and Kelvin Banks, one of the best tackle prospects in this class. And as it's gone on, there is maybe some arm size length issues, and he measured in fine. I mean, the measurement stuff was terrible to begin with, but he measured in fine, he tested fine. It's just no one's talking about him. And there's been talks, it's like, oh, obviously, like, Will Campbell's still there. I'm gonna talk about Will Campbell in a little bit. Armin Membu has been a huge riser in this process. Someone like Josh Simmons, who got hurt, but his tape was so good at the start of 2024, like, where Kelvin Banks has just kind of been there. You know he's good. You know you're going to be drafting a left tackle who's probably going to play for you for 10 plus years. And hey, maybe if it doesn't work out for tackle, there's been talks about moving him inside to guard, where maybe a team like the Seahawks, who they like their tackles with Charles Cross and Abe Lucas, maybe you pick him at, what are they, 18? You pick him at 18, you put him at guard, and then, oh, maybe if someone gets hurt, you can slide him out to tackle. Like, the versatility, he's just been so goddamn consistent the entire process where no one talks about him. And again, it's not a bad thing. He's still probably going to be a top 20 pick, but someone that people, again, it's not even like people are overthinking him. It's people just aren't talking about Kelvin Banks. And it is such a weird thing. Like, I would be very happy with Kelvin Banks at 13. Kick him over into guard. Maybe Patrick Paul doesn't work out at left tackle and you can slide him in there. Like, I don't know. But someone who's just gotten, like, again, no hype, no coverage at all during this entire draft prospect and or draft process, but again, has been consistently a top three, top four tackle, like consensus, the entire time. And you pick guys like that. You just know exactly what you're getting. The other tackle we're going to talk about here is Will Campbell out of LSU, who, want to talk about arm length issues, oh my god, they made such a big deal at the combine. Oh, his arms are a little short, and then his pro day happens, and it's like, wait, his arms are, they met the threshold. They met that 33-inch threshold, and apparently 43 of the 46 offensive linemen at the combine, when they measured in at their pro days, had longer arms. Doesn't make any sense. And people are like, oh, okay, well, the pro days, it's the school guys doing it. They're giving their guys. Nope, it's NFL scouts that are still doing it. It's just whoever that NFL scout at the combine who was measuring people was just doing it wrong. And apparently people were telling him he was doing it wrong, but he was so, oh, what's the word? He was so stubborn about it, where he's like, nope, this is it, I'm doing it, nope, this is it, this is how you do it. And people were like, no, it's not. And they just let him continue to do it. Again, I don't know how no one steps in to be like, you're not doing it right, because it fucked up a lot. Like, Will Campbell, he even talked about it, where he mentioned during an interview where I've been talked about one of the better tackles in the country for 3 years now, and the tape and the play, it all holds up. And now all of a sudden, I get my arms measured and they're a little small, and now that's just the biggest concern and people don't think I can play the position anymore. I think he said it's fucking stupid, and it is fucking stupid. When the tape shows you that this guy plays at an elite level at tackle, who cares what his arm size is? I think Will Campbell will be an outlier, and apparently his arms meet the threshold, so it doesn't actually matter. The whole arm length concerns about Will Campbell have been completely overblown. I think he's definitely in play at fourth overall for the Patriots. Will Campbell is awesome, and someone who, again, because of arm length and because that one guy at the combine couldn't measure arms properly and didn't know how to do it, it's just, it caused a whole big scene about Will Campbell and whatever. Will Campbell's really good. Who cares? It doesn't matter. And the last guy I'm going to talk about who is just getting completely overblown is Tet McMillan out of Arizona. The big-bodied wide receiver who can make contested catches, who is a good route runner, smooth route runner anyways. And his big thing, and again, like all of these guys who I've mentioned so far, who Tet McMillan, wide receiver one going into the year. Tet McMillan at the end of the year, wide receiver one. And obviously the Travis Hunter stuff's a little bit different, but like out of the guys who are just purely wide receiver, Tet McMillan should still be number one across everyone's board. I don't care about Emeka Ebuka and Luther Burden and Matthew Golden. Tet McMillan is that good. And people were worried about, oh, his speed, and does he have the top-end speed that matters, because he is a big-body guy, and I think at 6'4", 215 at his pro day, he ran a 4.5. That's fucking great. That is especially great at this size, and people were still like, I don't know, that's kind of slow. It's not. It's like, that's perfectly good NFL wide receiver speed, especially for a guy who's 6'4", who is going to be your jump ball guy. Get him in the end zone, like, high point the ball. That's what Tet McMillan is supposed to do for your offense. I don't care that he's not a burner. And the fact that people are making such a big deal about Tet McMillan when a guy a few years ago in Drake London, who, exact same thing, bigger bodied receiver, honestly probably comes in around the same size as a guy like Tet McMillan, who just straight up didn't run his 40, didn't do it at the combine, didn't do it as pro day. Drake London's turned out fine. I think it's a fairly decent comparable. I think Drake London might be a little bit better of a route runner, like, coming in, but, like, Tet McMillan is still awesome. And the fact that there's talks like, oh, Tet McMillan might not be, like, a top 20 player. He might not even be the first receiver taken. He should be the first receiver taken. I don't understand the Matthew Golden hype. I think Matthew Golden is going to be, like, a good NFL receiver. But I think Tet McMillan can be a wide receiver one. And I think that's where there needs to be a distinction is, like, Tet McMillan can be a pure wide receiver one outside threat for you, where I think a guy like Abuka, like Luther Burden, like Matthew Golden, they might not live up to that wide receiver one status. They might all be very good wide receivers, but being a true number one, it matters. And I think Tet McMillan can be that for a lot of offenses. And again, just getting overthought completely right now. So those are the guys who are getting overthought of anyways. Those are guys who might slide in the draft. And next week, we will get into all the juicy stuff. I was actually really, really excited to start recording that episode because I have some fun guys to talk about. I have, like, some, like, fun facts about some players, and it'll be a good episode next week. So I think I have 100, I have 137 names that we're going to talk about next week. And again, we're not going to go into details on all of them. I've put stars next to the guys who I want to dive into a little bit deeper, but I will mention 137 draft prospects on next week's show. I don't know. And then, so it's going to be overall impressions of the draft, then it's mock, then it's the actual NFL draft, and then we really get into the dog days of the NFL season where I got to actually think of things to do for shows coming up, but we'll end it here. Pretty decent episode, if I do say so myself. Oh, actually, no. How could I forget? Because I didn't say it at the top of the show. It is the one bad take of the week, and usually it's NFL specific, but because this great man right here, Alexander Ovechkin, did break Wayne Gretzky's record over the weekend, scoring 895 goals. I'm going to talk about that, and this is more a sports media rant in general, where they didn't necessarily have a bad take about it, but on ESPN on First Take, the Stephen A. Smith show, they had PK Subban on to obviously talk about the record and Ovechkin and what it means, and somehow LeBron James' name came up. No idea why either, but they started talking about, like, oh, what's more impressive, Ovi breaking Gretzky's goal-scoring record or LeBron getting the points record off Kareem? And then it turned into, who's been more durable over his career, or over their career, Alex Ovechkin or LeBron James? LeBron James doesn't need to get brought up every single fucking time you guys do a show. It infuriates me the way that sports media is done in the States, especially where it's so hot take. And again, the fact that LeBron is all these guys talk about, and it's not even like a joke. The fact that one of the biggest things in hockey history happened, something that no one thought was going to be possible, of someone breaking Gretzky's goal record. And the fact that this man right here did it, and they had to insert LeBron into the conversation just for whatever reason, it kills me. It kills me as a sports fan that this is how media is consumed and how people enjoy sports media, is hearing idiots talk about who's more durable, Ovechkin or LeBron. Shut the fuck up. It doesn't matter. Enjoy the moments. Enjoy the records. These people, they don't enjoy sports, in my opinion. They enjoy arguing with each other in nonsensical arguments. And again, nonsensical arguments in sports can be fun, but when that's your entire thing, you don't know what you're doing, and you are bad for sports media. And I don't know what the bad take in that all of it. Maybe it's just my bad take is just sports media sucks. That's not a bad take. That's the right take. But either way, Ovechkin deserves his flowers. My goat was probably hammered on the bench playing that third period. But sports media is in shambles. Sports media sucks, and that's why you listen to me, because I'm so level-headed and calm, and I've got no bias at all. That's obviously a lie, but I don't know. I genuinely think that I can do a better job than some of these people that they put on TV. It is insane to me of people who continuously get on TV to just yell loudly and say stupid shit. It kills me. It really does that, like, ratings don't, or it's just like viewership is all that matters, and doesn't matter in interactions, and doesn't matter that, oh, you post something and everyone thinks this is stupid and they're an idiot and they should not be, like, talking about this. Doesn't matter, because people are watching, and I hate that part of sports media. But that's my one bad sports take to talk about, is just ESPN inserting LeBron into every conversation imaginable. I absolutely hate it, but that's the show. We're all done now. Yeah, and as always, if you've enjoyed this, if you've liked this, please like, share, retweet, subscribe, tell all your friends, and until next time, peace.